everyone. Welcome to My Imposter Story. This is the podcast where authenticity meets vulnerability. I'm Laure Goubeau, your host. I'm an executive coach and talent consultant. I'm also a former lawyer and a longtime imposter. In each episode, we'll dive into the narratives of individuals who'll be sharing their stories of imposter syndrome and imposter thoughts. We'll explore their mental patterns, moments of self-doubt, and their fear of being exposed as a fraud, despite some pretty raging evidence of their abilities and achievements. Join me as we connect with our guests on the complexities of this universal experience. Let's get started. Hey, Sophie, it's really good to have you on the podcast. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Hey, Sophie, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about yourself so that our listeners get to know you a little bit.
Absolutely. I'll do my best to give you the short and sweet bio. So my name is Sophie Mervin. I currently live in Atlanta, Georgia. I've been here 10 years, but prior to that, I am Canadian through and through, born and raised. I did my undergrad at the University of Ottawa, go GGs, and then I did my master's at Macquarie University in Australia, both in communications, international communications. And then I worked for quite a while at various PR and integrated comms agencies before joining the corporate world. And now I am at Inspire Brands, overseeing public relations and events for the 6 brands.
Right. So currently VP.
Yes, yes, exactly.
What's I think it's important to
I didn't say that, did I? I forgot that part. Yes, my official title is Vice President, Public Relations and Event.
Yeah, that's pretty
good. That's very serious.
I mean, but Sophie, like, I've been following you for a little bit. Like, we go back many, many years, but pretty wild, like over 20 years in corporate brand awareness. And, you know, you worked in so many industries, consumer health, mm-hmm. CPG, hospitality, and now you are in QSR and food. Mm-hmm. Also, I mean, like, your career is just pretty incredible, like lots of awards. And it's, you know, you told me that the award-winning campaigns, like the Procter & Gamble Thank You Mom campaign for the mm-hmm. London 2012 Olympic Games, like that's the sort of campaign that makes people cry, right? Like, it's so touching.
Oh, yeah. Oh, gosh, I could tear up just thinking about that one. That's probably the most emotional one I've ever worked on. I also, fun fact, was pregnant when we worked on it with my first and only child. So I don't even know if I told you that part. So that was a very bizarre full circle. I'm concepting this amazing campaign that just obviously blew up and became probably one of the biggest ones I've worked on that I was most attached to. And I was pregnant. I was pregnant when I went to the Olympic Games in London to activate. And I didn't tell anybody because, you know, just the stigma around being pregnant, which is silly now that I think back. And so I was hiding this pregnancy while doing all this, while hanging out with the athletes' mothers. They all came as part of our campaign. So it was very emotional and very just unique to be in that position.
Yeah.
You know, and then I had a baby. And I was like, I get it. I understand why I'm crying so hard watching this spot. It was such a beautifully directed spot to Google it. Whoever hasn't seen it, Google it and watch it. Thank You Mom 2012 with P&G. It's unbelievable.
I fully agree with that. And so now you're focusing perhaps a little bit more on celebrity and pop culture strategies. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of neat, right? Because you can tap into your son's, you know, 10-year-old son's perspective and get some cool insights from him. But, you know, I think it's worthy to mention, like, you're behind some really out there initiatives, like the Jennifer Coolidge and Duncan getting ready for the Golden Globes 2023, Nick Cannon for BWW in January 2024, Reba McEntire for Sonic. Like, that's wild. Just before the Super Bowl. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. And you've won multiple awards. You're really involved in your community. You founded what you call the Women's Purpose Community in Atlanta, which is super neat. And you were recently named to the Atlanta Sports Council Board of Directors. Holy moly, Sophie, this is incredible.
Thank you. I do want to say one tiny correction. Yes, I am a founding member of the Women's Purpose community, but I didn't. There is an actual founder, Jessica Joynes. She is really the brainchild behind all that. I've just been involved since her second year, and then I became very heavily involved and been helping with a lot of the kind of the background stuff and like corporate sponsorships and helping with her events. So, just wanted to call that out because I wouldn't feel right saying I'm the actual founder of it, but I am very involved and I love everything about it. That's nationwide and it's just incredible. Yeah, the sports council, that was a big one. And I will say that came to me through someone on my team, incredibly, who's very connected. Her and her husband are very connected in the sports world in Atlanta, very connected in Atlanta, full stop. And she thought of me when they mentioned they were looking for someone to join the board. And that it only just started, but I'm very excited about it.
I'm super happy for you.
Very excited.
I'm sure you're going to have a lot of impact there.
I hope so.
Sophie, I like to start the podcast our conversation around imposter syndrome or imposter thoughts with a bit of a rapid fire
segment. Okay.
Yeah. So I'm going to, ask you a few questions and mm-hmm. your answer is numbers. So 1 means never and 10 means always. Got
okay.
it?
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. So I set really high standards for myself.
Hold on. 10 is always?
Yes. 8.
8, 9?
Okay. I compare myself to others.
6.
Luck got me where I am now.
Oh, that's a tough one. Depends on the day. Let's put it at 5.
Okay. The efforts of others got me where I am now.
Yeah, to a certain extent, maybe like a 6 or 7.
Okay. I experience fear of failure.
No, I'm going to go with 4.
External validation is important to me.
Oh, well, 7, 8.
Finally, I'm an overachiever.
Yeah, 10.
10, okay. That was 11. Up for you. That was up for you.
Yeah, it was fine. It's tough. It's really tough because there's so many different ways to think of those questions. And then I'm like, is it me 5 years ago, 10 years ago, today? And then really, no joke, what day of the week is it? Am I having a good day? Am I having a bad day? And it really does fluctuate. So it's hard to put a number to it. I think I was pretty close to probably reality.
Okay. Yeah. And can you tell us in your own words, what is your version of imposter syndrome or imposter thoughts?
Yeah, well, first I want to say, I actually love you. Just introduced this idea to me about imposter thoughts versus syndrome, which I like because I was telling you, I started Googling it a little bit just in preparing for this. And the word syndrome seemed to be like this weird, there's a difficulty around that because it makes it sound medical.
Yeah.
Which is it not? Yeah. You're stuck with it and it can be diagnosed.
Yeah.
I'd never realized that it actually can be diagnosed. And then I started thinking, wait, I don't like that at all, because I think it's very, I'm not saying it's easy to beat it or get rid of it if you have it. But it is kind of and I'm saying this with air quotes, like a made up thing to me.
Okay.
So, it's very emotional. It's totally based on your surroundings and who you're with and the people who are either supporting you or not. So to me, I like the idea of imposter thoughts. I don't think I have imposter syndrome. I think I've definitely had imposter thoughts throughout my whole career. And it's basically just the idea that in that given moment, and luckily for me, it never lasts long. It's probably my Gemini brain. I move on real fast. But in that moment, you do not feel like you have earned the right to either, be there or provide whatever you're being asked of. It's like you don't deserve to be where you're at. And if you're there, it's more based on luck than actual hard work, which is ridiculous on so many levels. But I think that's how I've interpreted it throughout my career. There's been many moments where I thought, oh gosh, how did I get here? Did I just get lucky? Which is silly. Mm-hmm. They haven't. Yeah.
Sorry to jump in.
No, go ahead.
So have you also thought about it and, someone saw something in you and helped you get to a place and you're like, oh my gosh. Like someone saw something in me that I don't see in myself.
Not that I don't see myself, because I'm a very, very confident person. I've been for a very long time. I've always been very comfortable and confident with who I am and what I'm capable of and where I should be. But yeah, 100%, I know I'm a good saleswoman. That is the core of my job. I've been doing PR, like ask my parents. I've been PRing my life since I was born. I mean, I was born negotiating stuff. I should have been a lawyer. I just don't like to read and study. But, you know, so I'm very good at that. And so I think I come across, I'm one of those people that comes across very strong in interviews.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I can talk the talk, but then can I walk the walk? And I think those are the moments where and so, yes, I can get people to believe in me, absolutely. But there's definitely a moment once, you know, let's say I get the job and I'm in the job and I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I done? Like, I'm a good talker, but am I going to be able to actually do this? So yeah, I have those moments a lot.
Where do you think it comes from?
I think a lot of it is society. If I think of my imposter syndrome, I think I was made to feel this way a lot when I was, especially when I was younger and being female. Mm-hmm. I'm in a female dominated industry. So the PR industry is very, very female dominated, which is great. I love it. I have so many incredible women to look up to. Every boss I've had in my life, I have something good I can pull from them. And oddly, almost all of my bosses until now have been female. So that's been really, really nice. A lot of just great people to look up to and to learn from. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, even though it's a lot of women, the clients I worked with, or, you know, that often the head of the company or the president or what have you, was often men. And I think, especially as a young woman, I certainly more than once felt like I was the youngest and only female in the boardroom, or I speak a certain way, or I dress a certain way. And I like to have fun. I'm someone who's always injected a lot of fun in everything I do. I think life is too short, and I think we take ourselves way too seriously sometimes, and we have to lighten it up. But that has definitely haunted me in the past, because it might come across like I'm not as intellectual or I don't care as much. So I think there is, you know, when I say society, to me, it's you are supposed to act a certain way. And I hate to say it, but 20 years ago as a woman, you were kind of supposed to act a certain way. I never wanted to be that person. I wanted to be at the table with, you know, the older dudes that were making decisions, because I thought I should make the decisions with them. So there's definitely moments where I felt like I didn't belong. And I blame that a little bit just on my surroundings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What has helped you in your career?
I think just believing in myself and people around me. I answered your question earlier when you asked about validation, right? So
yeah,
it's going to sound stereotypical, even though I'm a very old geriatric one. I am a millennial, and one of our traits is that we like the accolades. We like the accolades. We like to be, you know, we like to be reminded that we're doing a good job. I'm not going to lie. I do like it. It is kind of my validation. I like praise. I can admit that. And so I think just having, like I said, I had a variety of female bosses that were amazing, that I still talk to and look up to and learn from and, you know, go to them when I need help or guidance. I think they just helped me, you know, they help either showing me through their actions or, you know, more in a more straightforward way, just continued to reinforce that I needed to believe in myself, which it never faltered too much. I do really believe in myself, but I think in those moments where there's a little crack and a little weakness, you know, and you start to question, just having a really good network. I've always had incredible advocates and like cheerleaders around me who believed in me and who helped me.
Yeah. It's really interesting what you're saying about the fact that you had so many incredible, powerful women to look up to. Mm-hmm. And I think you're incredibly lucky. You're incredibly lucky to have that, right? Because I think in certain industries, there are very few role models for women. And I mean, I think we immediately go to the industries that we know, which mm-hmm. I won't name. But so then my question is, you know, how can our listeners or folks who are experiencing imposter thoughts right now and don't have someone to look up to that can, you know, give them that little boost, how can you find it within yourself? And I'm sure there are moments, right? Like you probably had, you know, you had to go, you had to find that within yourself just to like bring yourself back up and like, I belong here. I have my seat at the table. And so I'm so curious, like, what are some of the strategies or the habits that really came from within?
Yeah, I think, again, I think it just comes back to the confidence and believing in yourself, you know, and that's such a big piece of how, that's a good question. I don't, gosh, if I could bottle it up, I was just saying this to one of my best friends here the other day. She said, if I had half the confidence you had and have, and I said, gosh, I wish I could give it to you. If you could only see what I see. I think there's so many, and again, I'm going to say women because I see it so much in women who just, if they could see what the rest of us see, you know, they wouldn't have these doubts or these thoughts. I think it's just being tough and being strong and keep pushing. But it's a tough thing. It's really not, I don't know. I don't know how to teach it. I think for me, if I think back, when I started having self-doubt, you know, and I had my moment where my little pity party and should I have said that? Or like, I've literally poured over. I've had moments where I've thought about one sentence up until recently. A sentence that came out of my mouth and I'm like, oh my gosh, why did you say that? Why did you say it? It didn't come out right. You didn't sound smart, like all the things. But then I start to think of it logically. And I think maybe it's pulling the emotion out of it and thinking logically. And if you can come up with a system where your brain just tries to really flip to the logical side, I have a job. They've given me this job. I'm doing the job well because I'm being told I'm doing it well, or at least I'm not being told I'm not doing it well. I was sitting at the conference room table with them and I haven't been fired. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but I'm still here and I'm still working. So maybe it's more, you know, it's more my thoughts, my feelings rather than theirs, and reminding that yourself that you are probably your worst critic and there's a good chance that everyone else in the room actually didn't feel the way you felt or saw or heard what you think they saw or heard. And it's just, I think, developing and flexing that muscle of being able to just push it away. But look, easier said than done, because like I said, 20 plus years in, I still have moments where I question.
But I think it's a super important muscle that we need to learn to flex, right?
Definitely.
Like the younger you are, the younger you can listen to that inner voice and catch it and be like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yes.
Let me reframe this negative self-talk and rationalize and like put it into perspective. I know, just listening to it, sounds like you've been quite agile in developing this quite early on, and it's been very helpful.
Yeah, I think, you know, I had a pretty, and I love him to death, but I had a very critical, typical French dad, you know, where nothing was ever good enough, you know.
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. And love him to death. And he is a big reason I am the way I am. My parents are a huge reason why I have the confidence I have. He also injected so much confidence in me, but maybe a bit of that critique helped too, because I learned very early on to kind of fight back and be like, well, no, hold on. I don't believe in that. I have one memory of a girl I worked with in Montreal. This was my second agency job. So I was very young. I was in my 20s. And, you know, probably only 3 or 4 years in, but I was already like, you know, climbing the ladder and doing everything I could. I was always very ambitious. And she came to me. We were probably the same age, but different levels. And she came to me. I'll never forget. Our office was on Saint Laurent. I mean, this was like 20 years ago. And I could probably tell you what she was wearing. And she said to me, how do you have so much confidence? I see you speaking to the execs, the senior clients. I see you walking around and you just carry yourself in a way that you believe in yourself. And I said, well, I do. And she's like, it's that simple. And I said, it is. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I believe in myself, and not everyone's going to believe in me, and not everyone's going to like me or want to work with me, or et cetera, et cetera. But I believe in myself, and I'm not going to walk around hesitating or not showcasing that, because that's also part of the job I do in PR. You have to have a certain amount of confidence. And I think the way we show up as humans helps in the work that we do. And it's funny, I always thought of that. And I was like, I didn't know what to tell her in the moment. And now I feel like I wish I could teach that and bottle it up and give it away, you know, but it's hard. It's hard, because I truly think that especially women are not taught that. I think there's so much negative self-talk. There's so much doubt, and it's so unnecessary. It should not be that way.
I fully agree. And I love what you said. I think just those, sometimes it's that simple, even though it's not simple, but I wish you looked at yourself the way that I see you.
Oh my gosh. If I told you how often I say that, but when one particular friend who I'm going to force to listen to this, and she'll know who she is, if she saw what we saw, it's unbelievable. I mean, all of it, full package. And she just doesn't. And I can't rewire her brain. You know, that's not work I can do. No one can really do that. Maybe a shrink would have better luck, but it's not even about that. It's like, I think it really is a state of mind. And I think we are told in society also not to be overly zealous, right? Or, you know, cause, oh, she's so full of herself. She's so vain. She's so this, she's so that. Like, yeah. Well, yeah. Am I, or am I just like a big believer in myself and I want to have a happy, fun life.
Job. Yeah.
Yeah. But it extends to everything else too. As a mom, as a partner, as a daughter, like, you know, it's never going to be perfect, but I don't want to focus on the bad. That's not fun.
So, you mentioned that, you know, once in a while it still creeps up, right? These impulses.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
What have been for you some of the benefits of imposter thoughts, imposter syndrome?
I think it allows me to take a pause. I do move a mile a minute and I am very confident. So maybe sometimes I don't stop to assess and just think things through as much as I probably should, or just even have awareness, you know? And so I think, when it happens, I pause and I start to dig in a little bit more and think through certain things and the way I show up. And I might adjust a little bit, because sometimes there is adjusting to be done. You know, it's like I said, no one's perfect. I'm far from it. One thing that always comes back to haunt me, and the example that I could give you of recent imposter syndrome, is that I've always thought of myself as someone who doesn't sound as intellectual as other people. I always jokingly blame it on the fact that my first language is French. So you might relate to me on this, Laure, but you know, I grew up speaking French, so I never thought my English was quite at the level as, and I have no accent though. So you wouldn't know that my first language is in English, but I don't know if that's just an excuse. Cause let's be honest, I've been working in English for decades now. But I just am not someone who comes across very serious and intellectual, and there, you know, people at work who do come across that way. And I love to keep things light. I like to joke around. I love making people laugh and smile. I think when I bring that to the conference room, it's appreciated, because not many people do. And I think that's what makes people like me and want to work with me, because I bring a certain lightness to it. But the reverse of that is that there's definitely moments where maybe I'm like, oof, did I take it a bit too far? Maybe I shouldn't have said that, or I shouldn't crack that joke, or, you know, those are my moments where I'm like, I don't belong in that room because I can't for 5 minutes just, you know, shut up and be serious. Yeah, no, for real. Seriously. Like, I'm like, damn it, Sophie, why couldn't you just not? Everything people say just spurs a joke in my head. I have a serious issue with this. So I always, okay, and I always I have a comeback. Right?
I can fully relate. I'm always
always thinking of a joke, and I always have a comeback. Like, I'm an incredible comeback person, but sometimes it's like, Sophie, you didn't need to open your mouth. You didn't need, and not in a mean way, in a joking way. So it happened like not long ago. It was at a dinner, but I said something and I didn't mean for it. It came out very like, it came out just a little like ditzy. I knew it. And the person who heard it kind of joked about it, but it was such a sweet joke. It wasn't at all a reproach, but I went home. And when I tell you, I overanalyzed this, I was like, oh my gosh, he must think I'm so stupid. Like, I'm so dumb. And you know, for the rest of the evening, I was like, why did I say that? That was so dumb. Like, now I need to go course correct and tell him I'm not dumb. And then woke up the next day and I'm like, of course he doesn't think I'm dumb. That is dumb. Like, of course he doesn't. He knows I'm not. He sees me work. He knows what I'm capable of. He's heard me speak normally many times, but it's like I let myself spin a little bit too far. And so, sorry, your question was what, like, how does it help? I think it just helps me adjust a little bit. So in my case, shut your mouth. You don't always need to be offering anything. You know, you don't always, I'm just a very vocal person, but maybe like keep it quiet, listen. You know, I can do better at listening. I'm a big talker. That's one of my areas of opportunities for sure. And it just helps me adjust a little bit and be a little bit more the person I want to be to show up in that particular instance. So I do think it helps, you know, you reflect and you adjust.
Yeah. I'm really what I'm hearing here is that it helps you calibrate really what is one of your strengths, right? Like this is one of your super strengths, like your authenticity and your presence. But sometimes when we overplay the strength, right, it can bite us a little bit, right?
And absolutely.
So it sounds like your imposter syndrome is like helping you check that a little bit and just and self-reflect, et cetera. I love that.
Yeah, I think no, you're absolutely right. It's like the one thing I'm really good at can sometimes come back to bite me, you know? Yeah. And I think with age though, I'm realizing more and more that I actually don't care. And it probably doesn't, it's not as impactful as I thought it was, you know, the negative side of it. Probably people are not taking the time to overthink it the way I am. So
Are busy. Like they've moved on.
Right. That's I always tell myself that. I'm like, you really think people care that much that they're going to remember the one thing you said at a restaurant? No, no one cares.
No.
But it's true. It's true. It's just keeping yourself in check, I think. And that flexing that muscle again to be like, nope, don't let that thought in. You do not need that in your life right now or ever.
That's right. Oh my gosh, Sophie, this has been an incredible chat. I feel like we covered so many topics together.
I know.
So many layers of imposter syndrome. I'm so grateful that you took the time to connect with us. I know you're super busy.
I was so excited when you reached out to me, especially with this topic. I feel like we could talk for hours. There's so much to talk about, but I'm more than excited to hear about all the different, points of view and the interviews you're going to do. No, I just think it's so fun to then hear about other people's experience and realize that A, we're not alone. And B, there's like probably other tools out there I haven't even thought of. And it's a great topic. So thank you for digging into it.
I hope you have a great day. I'll talk to you soon, Sophie.
Thanks, Laura. You too. We'll talk soon.
That's it for this episode of My Imposter Story. Thanks for listening. Much gratitude to my guest, my editor Virage Sonore, and soundtrack composers Collectif Neuf, as well as my graphic designer websites.ca. If you think you might want to share your imposter story, reach out to me on my LinkedIn. I'd love to hear from you. To hear more episodes, you can find them all on your favorite podcast platforms. And if you've enjoyed this episode, pay it forward. Share it with your network, subscribe, and leave a review. À très bientôt.